Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes 5 times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tim, is it already 9 o'clock in the 9 o'clock hour? Are we moving along that rapidly progressing through this week? My goodness gracious. A couple of things. We get some texts here that sometimes make no sense. Somebody texted in about Derek Carr and said he got hurt on purpose so he wouldn't have to play. And that argument kind of collapsed on itself because, well, why wouldn't he want to play unless it was fear of getting hurt? And then if he gets hurt so he doesn't have to play, that makes no sense at all. But this text does make some sense. Kind of surprised the Saints didn't sign Daniel Jones to the practice squad. Now, I don't know what the collective bargaining agreement says, but, you know, that does happen occasionally where an NFL team, especially a quarterback like that, will sign him to pick his brain for a week. And I am surprised that that didn't happen. One other thing, I got a text here from the City Park Conservancy that they are having a meeting tonight at 6 o'clock. And they want you to help plan the future of City Park. It's at Holy Trinity Greek Orthodox Cathedral. They don't give me an address of where that is, but I'm sure you can find it. Daniel Jones plays for the Vikings, Tim tells me. Well, that's why they didn't sign him. So there you go. Anyway, City Park Conservancy wants to hear about you. They got a family tonight at meeting tonight, Holy Trinity Greek Orthodox Cathedral. They want to know what you think the City Park should look like and what would you like to see there. So, with that being said, let's move on to our friend David Hammer, WWL Louisiana investigative reporter, who's got a tonight. It's a one-hour special, David?
Yes, it is, Tommy.
Tell me about it.
Well, I've lost count of how many times you have had me or my reporting partner, Ramon Antonio Vargas, on to talk about the investigation of Lawrence Hecker, Monsignor Lawrence Hecker, a Catholic priest who is one of the most inveterate child molesters in the Archdiocese of New Orleans. We've been investigating him for years, along with the larger clergy abuse scandal. But here we are, and he has just, in the last couple of weeks here now, pleaded guilty on all counts to child rape and kidnapping. And so we wanted to put the whole thing together so that, you know, you don't have to remember all the little incremental changes over the course of these last several years. We put it all together for you in an hour-long special airing tonight on WWL Louisiana and on our streaming app on demand at WWL Plus. And it's really a compelling story, and we tell the story of the victims of Lawrence Hecker. We tell how we, Ramon Antonio Vargas and I, confronted Lawrence Hecker on camera and forced him essentially to admit to his crimes in the 1960s and 70s because we had the document that Ramon was able to get that was under seal that showed that he had confessed to these crimes back in 1999. And then it led directly to his arrest 2 weeks later on child rape and kidnapping charges. And over the last year and a half, we've gone through this kind of drama of him being found potentially incompetent to stand trial, then Alzheimer's and dementia, and then found competent to stand trial. And then when he went to trial, was about to go to trial earlier this month, he pled guilty on all counts.
So let me take you back a little bit on the time frame here. He confessed in 1999 to whom?
To church officials. There was a written statement that encapsulated all of his confessed crimes, specifically saying that he engaged in overtly sexual acts with at least three underage boys, and describing other sexual contact with four additional boys in the 1960s and 70s. We have heard from additional folks who came forward and said that he abused them. And what we ended up learning from documents inside the church record was that there was documented cases where he was in the pool at Notre Dame Seminary and sharing his victims with other, with seminarians and with other clergy, really horrible stuff, and stuff that was laid out clearly for the church hierarchy dating back to 1988. We know of him meeting, of Lawrence Hecker meeting with then Archbishop Philip Hannon and addressing complaints that Archbishop Hannon had received from the parents.
Let me slow you down a little bit. This is when now?
1988.
He's meeting with Archbishop Hannon about complaints that had been received.
Correct.
Okay.
And he was sent on a sabbatical to New York City. Later, when he was diagnosed with pedophilia in 1999 and met with Archbishop Schulte, he was sent again on a sabbatical, this time to Pennsylvania to a psychiatric facility, and was diagnosed with incurable pedophilia. All of this was known to the church, and we laid this out over the course of the last year and a half or so with our investigation. And tonight's special really puts it all together, synthesizes it, shows how we developed the investigation and how it's also fed into a larger investigation of a cover-up by the Archdiocese of New Orleans over several decades.
Tell me what time this airs, David.
It airs at 9 o'clock tonight on WWL Louisiana Channel 4, and you can watch it anytime on our streaming app, WWL Plus, after 9 o'clock tonight.
So, after 1999, after his second diagnosis of pedophilia, accurate?
It was his first official diagnosis of pedophilia, but it was after his second sabbatical that he was sent on for treatment by the Archdiocese, yes.
But they didn't send him on sabbatical because he was having doubts about his faith. They sent him on sabbatical because of the complaints of pedophilia,
exactly.
Right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And he received treatment, and he was diagnosed in an official medical record with pedophilia. And the church officials were made aware of these specific things. And he was still promoted in 2000. To the exalted title of Monsignor in a ceremony at St. Louis Cathedral presided over by Archbishop Schulte, even after he knew about the pedophilia diagnosis, even after he knew that Lawrence Hecker had confessed in writing to all of these crimes.
What did he confess to in 1999? I don't want to give away your special here, but you've spoken about this
I've reported this. Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's no secret here, Tommy. I mean, we've reported this in detail because of the documents that we specifically Ramon Vargas was able to get, and then I was able to get additional information. We were able to confront him and get him on camera. There's no secret. He had admitted in 1999 to overtly sexual acts, that's a direct quote by Lawrence Hecker, overtly sexual acts with at least three specific teens that he named in that letter, and then additionally four others who he talked about having various types of sexual contact or harassment. And he gave this interview to us at his doorstep where he talked for 18 minutes about why, how he justified this in his own mind as part of the sexual revolution, as something that he felt that was okay at the time, even though it was a crime to have sex with an underage child at that time, just as much as it was in 1999, and just as much as it is now.
If I remember correctly, he said it was the zeitgeist, right, of the time?
That's correct. That was his word in a deposition, another document, another piece of evidence that the church did not want to get out and fought to keep secret. We were able to get a copy of, and yes, he described it that way in a video deposition in 2020, where he referred to it as the zeitgeist of the time. He said to me on camera that it was the sexual revolution and people, he was caught up in that and he fell for that, is what he said.
And that was what, when he admitted to choking, correct me if I'm saying anything wrong here because I don't do anything wrong legally, but because it is convoluted, but when he admitted to choking and raping a teenager, did he not admit to that?
So when he went on camera with Ramon and I, with Ramon and me in 2023, he denied ever doing that. But just this month, he admitted under oath in court, when he pled guilty to all counts, he admitted to doing that. That's exactly what he was charged with in this criminal case. And now he'll be sentenced on December 18th to an automatic life sentence because of that.
So when you tie all of this together, and 1970, when was when that happened, David?
1975.
So when you tie all of this together, this guy, Lawrence Hecker, choked a teenager and raped him unconscious in 1975, which he says at that point he thought was the zeitgeist, which I don't know, having lived through 1975, that I ever thought it was okay to choke somebody and rape them when they were unconscious. He confessed to this in 1999 to church officials, correct?
No, he in 1999, he only confessed to the molestation, which has a statute of limitations that didn't allow him to be charged with that in these current times. But rape, choking somebody out and raping them, does not have a statute of limitations. And that's why he was charged with that specifically. He did not admit to that to church officials. In fact, in 1975, when that complaint was brought forward to the principal of the high school that that boy attended, they just dismissed it and didn't look into it and didn't do anything with it.
All right. And I think we're going to take a break here. We'll pick it up. We come back and we'll go back and try to go through this chronologically a little bit. And we'll pick it up in 88 because he committed these offenses in 1975. In 88, we'll talk about his conversation with then Archbishop Hannon, which led to his sabbatical and so-called treatment. And the other thing I want to point out, David, is that I hope your special shows this. I presume it's gonna. You know, you see this Hecker guy with his walker and his, you know, supposed to be the sad old man and all of this kind of stuff. That's not what he was in 1975 when he choked and raped this 17-year-old. And I think that's important as well. And I presume you're going to bring that out in the special.
I think it'll be abundantly clear.
Okay, good. David Hammer, our guest, WWL Louisiana investigative reporter, talking about David Hecker and his hour special tonight on Channel 4. This is going to be something to see. He puts it all together for you. And even with all of that, it started in 75. He goes off for treatment in 88. He's diagnosed in 99 as a pedophile, an incurable pedophile, and is after being sent on sabbatical by Archbishop Schulte. But then in 2000, he's given a big ceremony and a tribute and promoted to Monsignor, but it doesn't end there, I don't think. I think it goes on beyond that. 9:22, Tommy Tucker back in a flash, WWL. 9:29, talking to David Hammer. He's got a special coming up tonight at 9 o'clock on Channel 4 and also on, what is the streaming thing?
WWL Plus.
WWL Plus, and you can see it after 9 o'clock. The name of the special is Pedophile Behind the Pulpit?
No, it's Praying from the Pulpit. Pray with a...
Oh, praying from the pulpit. I'm sorry. They gave me the wrong information here. Somebody texted in and said, two texts here. Why do you guys keep going over and over the same things with this pervert priest? There's no new info, but you keep sensationalizing it. Your infatuation is becoming creepy. And I respond to that by saying it's a systematic cover-up by the archdiocese, and we're being creepy? Come on, brah. And then somebody else texted in, I think this is the real point. Like you, Tommy, we just can't be Catholic until the church can truly come clean. And this goes to at least my feelings as a lifelong Catholic, that until we fix this, I'm not going back. And that's just my own personal feelings. Let's go back in this. Go ahead.
I think that's why it's important that we do this special and synthesize everything into this hour-long program, because I think it helps people see that it's not just kind of picking and cherry picking things. It's showing that this is part of a larger issue, because remember, there's still 500 plus victims or survivors of sexual abuse who have claims against over 300 priests that are pending through this archdiocese bankruptcy case. So this is not just one guy. You know, this one person happened to lead to a much larger criminal investigation of the cover-up, but he's emblematic of the larger problem.
And I'm going to say systemic, however you want to phrase it, whatever the right word is. You're the writer, David. You can tell me. But this is more than just one pervert priest. This is good. This goes back to, and let's just talk about the archdiocese's handling of this. So he admits, and correct me again, David, if I'm wrong, I'm trying to get my notes right here. He finally admits when he pleads guilty to choking out and raping a kid who was unconscious in 1975. At one point in this whole convoluted lie story that he tells, he says it was the zeitgeist of the time, which for anybody who was alive in 1975 knows it was never acceptable or perceived to be acceptable by anybody, let alone a priest, to choke out and rape anybody. So in 1988, the archdiocese, then Archbishop Hannon, gets complaints from parishioners about this guy, this Hecker guy?
Right. And, you know, the complaint that was filed back in 1975 that went to the school was never dealt with. And the person who was the principal of the school at the time, Paul Calamari, later became a priest, and he's now admitted that he, too, was a child molester. So that stopped that cold in its tracks. Then 1988, it goes all the way up to the archbishop, but again, nothing is done other than sending him on a sabbatical. And he moves from parish to parish, but he continues to be a minister and you know, have access to children. And it continues on up until the late 90s when more of these complaints start pouring in. He finally admits everything on a confession in 1999. He's sent for more treatment, but he's made a Monsignor in 2000, returned to ministry again at St. Charles Borromeo in Destrehan, which is attached to a grammar school.
Wait, slow down. And 2000, he's made a Monsignor, and then what happens after that?
He's returned to ministry at a church that's attached to a grammar school where he was in charge of taking care, essentially looking after himself, he says to me in an interview. Then nobody was, you know, making sure that he wasn't having access to kids even at that point, even after the church leadership knew of all this stuff.
And who was your archbishop at that time?
It was Schulte, and then later in 2002, it was Archbishop Hughes, who was directed by an internal review board that he should laicize Lawrence Hecker. He should take away his priestly, make sure that he's no longer a priest. And he didn't do that. He just let him retire quietly, didn't inform the public, allowed him to get his full retirement benefits. And in 2011, the current archbishop, Gregory Amond, was given a whole rundown of all the complaints against Father Hecker or Monsignor Hecker. And he went ahead on the 60th anniversary of his ordination to celebrate his jubilee year in 2018 before telling the public in a list that was released in 2018 that he had credible claims of child sexual abuse. But again, didn't detail all of the many claims that he had faced. And so it really was this uphill battle for the police, the state police and the FBI, to finally be able to bring these charges, and DA Jason Williams here in New Orleans to bring the charges and force this to go to trial.
Complaints come in 88. Nothing's done for the victims. Nothing. No investigation is done, correct me if I'm wrong, other than
correct.
Sending him off for treatment, right? Or sabbatical,
correct.
Or whatever it is. Then
correct.
In 1999, he confesses a written confession to church officials?
Correct.
About molesting kids?
Correct.
Then in 2000, they bring him in St. Louis Cathedral and promote him and make him a Monsignor, give him an honored title, right?
Correct.
Then in 2002, they put him at a parish that's next to
us. In 2000, they put him in a parish, 2000. And then in 2002, they allow him to retire, remove him from ministry, but not in any kind of public announcement. And they did at that time, for the first time, the church reported one complaint against Hecker to the police, to the NOPD. That was the first time that he was reported by church officials to the police, finally, in 2002. But it was only on one complaint, and nothing was done with that.
So I presume they keep a file on this guy, because I don't know about the company that owns Channel 4 now. Who is it? Who owns Channel 4?
Tegna.
Tegna. I know they got a file on you that goes back to Lord knows when. I'm sure Odyssey has a file on me that goes back to way back when. Common sense would dictate that the archdiocese has a file on Hecker, and it wouldn't take.
Well, you don't need to speculate, Tommy. We have the documents from that file many of which were leaked to us and that were filed under seal in the court and were kept under seal by the bankruptcy court for several years before DA Jason Williams was finally able to get them via subpoena. But we were able to get copies of those and show exactly in writing how the Archdiocese of New Orleans repeatedly knew about these claims and were more focused on making sure that the public didn't find out about them than they were about punishing or reporting to the police.
And that is the point right there, David, because you don't have to be a detective to say, well, wait a minute. This guy's got claims going back to 1988. He confessed in 1999, which lends, if he confesses in 99 and he's diagnosed as a pedophile, a clinical diagnosis of that, well, then you got to go back and believe that the complaints from 1988 are legitimate. It would beg any type of credibility to think anything but even with that, in 2000, they make him a Monsignor and then put him in a parish where he's got access to kids.
That's right. That's right. And I think that's the reason we wanted to do the special. You know, the comment that you received about us, you know, continuing to go over the same information. First of all, as we've gone through this, there's been more and more new information as we've reported this out. But the point of doing this hour-long special is you can see the whole scope of it, and you can see what we've just been talking about how the church handled the complaints and how they continued to bury this information, and how even difficult it was, even in these last couple of years, for the district attorney, Jason Williams, to get the information and the documentation that he needed to pursue the criminal case against Lawrence Hecker.
And that leads me to my next question, which is, and I talked to Jason himself about this a couple of days ago, about he said, why should it shouldn't be this hard to prosecute a pedophile, right? And I'm paraphrasing his words there. But if Lawrence Hecker wasn't a priest and these charges were made, if in 1975 somebody had gone to the police and Lawrence Hecker was not a priest, I got to believe that this story would have taken a different road. That's the point in all of this, right?
That is part of the point for sure. I mean, the police have a spotty history of pursuing claims against Catholic priests.
But now, wait, that's why I said if Hecker was not a priest.
Right, right. And let's be honest here, though, Tommy. The police in various jurisdictions around South Louisiana have a spotty record of pursuing sex crimes in general for a long time, something that Jason Williams, I know, has talked about. He talked about it at the press conference outside court when Lawrence Hecker pled guilty, that this has often been an uphill battle. But I think that when they pursue those claims, and they have in the past, they've had some success in convicting especially child rapists and child molesters. And, you know, they've been very aggressive, especially with child pornography charges and things like that, going after people like that. But because of statutes of limitations that have prevented these, you know, criminal charges from being pursued after a certain period of time, a lot of these claims that date back to the 60s and 70s and 80s in the church were not pursued. The key here with the 1975 case with the rape was that rape doesn't have a statute of limitations. That is what made this unique. It allowed the police and it allowed D.A. Williams to go forward with prosecution.
One question I have, and I don't know if you have the answer or not, is what happens to Hecker now, and where is he now? And somebody texted in, and I got to wonder if part of the guilty plea was so that he could live his life out wherever he is now and not go to prison. What is the deal currently, David?
Well, first of all, there was no guilty plea deal. You know,
when let me clean that up. I didn't mean to make it seem as though it was an official deal. Part of his strategy, let me put it that way, was where he was
hoping. He pled guilty on all counts, Tommy, and there's no deal to allow him to live out his sentence in a special place. Right now, he is in a long-term care facility on the West Bank. And
is that Weinhoven?
Under armed guard. I do not believe it. But the place that he's staying is under armed guard, and it is part of his incarceration. And he does need treatment because he does have physical ailments. But the comment that you received earlier about him being, frail, and why are you going after this guy? And I've heard from people who were taking care of him over the course of this trial, the pre-trial process, saying, you know, he's really an old guy and he's incapacitated, and it's really incredible that they're pursuing this. It reminds me a little bit of the Mississippi burning case, when the three freedom riders, Cheney, Schwerner, and Goodman, were murdered and buried in Philadelphia, Mississippi. The state of Mississippi didn't pursue charges until 2005, and by that point, when they brought in the head of the Ku Klux Klan who had organized the whole thing, Edgar Ray Killen, he was attached to tubes and in a wheelchair, and people said, why are you going after this poor old guy? Well, he was convicted of three counts of manslaughter, and like you said, Tommy, when he was the head of the Klan and was, you know, killing these kids, he wasn't, you know, a doddering old guy. And, you know, there's no statute of limitations for murder and rape for a reason, because, you know, people who do those things have to be punished under the law and can be punished until the day they die. So if Lawrence Hecker only lives for another month or two or a year or whatever it is, as a 93-year-old man, he's still a convicted child rapist, and he's still going to be incarcerated during that time.
I want to retract this. I said Weinhoven. I should never have said that if I didn't know that. I just, when you said long-term care facility, and I thought Catholic priest, I just immediately, even though he is laicized, I thought that, and my apologies to Weinhoven. I shouldn't have said that. It's not Weinhoven. My dad was in Weinhoven, so I'm very familiar with the facility. We take a break. We'll pick it up here when we come back. A couple of different things we come back, David. First of all, does Hecker ever go to Angola, which is where he belongs? And then we'll talk about the ongoing investigation with the state police bankruptcy case and more. David Hammer, our guest, WWL Louisiana investigative reporter. If this would be a Fortune 500 company, I think people would be looking at it differently. And I think the story would be different if it was a Fortune 500 company. So I think that the Archdiocese is using its, ironically, its role as a religion to cover up some of the worst crimes. 944 traffic, WWL. .929 talking to David Hammer. He's got a special coming up tonight at 9 o'clock on Channel 4 and also on, what is the streaming thing?
WWL Plus.
WWL Plus, and you can see it after 9 o'clock. The name of the special is Pedophile Behind the Pulpit?
No, it's Praying from the Pulpit. Pray with a
Praying from the Pulpit. Praying. I'm sorry, they gave me the wrong information here. Somebody texted in and said, two texts here. Why do you guys keep going over and over the same things with this pervert priest? There's no new info, but you keep sensationalizing it. Your infatuation is becoming creepy. And I respond to that by saying it's a systematic cover-up by the Archdiocese, and we're being creepy? Come on, brah. And then somebody else texted in, I think this is the real point. Like you, Tommy, we just can't be Catholic until the church can truly come clean. And this goes to at least my feelings as a lifelong Catholic, that until we fix this, I'm not going back. And that's just my own personal feelings. Let's go back in this. Go ahead.
I think that's why it's important that we do this special and synthesize everything into this hour-long program, because I think it helps people see that it's not just kind of picking and cherry picking things. It's showing that this is part of a larger issue, because remember, there's still 500 plus victims or survivors of sexual abuse who have claims against over 300 priests that are pending through this archdiocese bankruptcy case. So this is not just one guy. You know, this one person happened to lead to a much larger criminal investigation of the cover-up, but he's emblematic of the larger problem.
And I'm going to say systemic, however you want to phrase it, whatever the right word is. You're the writer, David. You can tell me. But this is more than just one pervert priest. This goes back to, and let's just talk about the archdiocese's handling of this. So he admits, and correct me again, David, if I'm wrong, I'm trying to get my notes right here. He finally admits when he pleads guilty to choking out and raping a kid who was unconscious in 1975. At one point in this whole convoluted lie story that he tells, he says it was the zeitgeist of the time, which for anybody who was alive in 1975 knows it was never acceptable or perceived to be acceptable by anybody, let alone a priest, to choke out and rape anybody. So in 1988, the archdiocese, then Archbishop Hannon, gets complaints from parishioners about this guy, this Hecker guy?
Right. And, you know, the complaint that was filed back in 1975 that went to the school was never dealt with. And the person who was the principal of the school at the time, Paul Calamari, later became a priest, and he's now admitted that he, too, was a child molester. So that stopped that cold in its tracks. Then 1988, it goes all the way up to the archbishop, but again, nothing is done other than sending him on a sabbatical. And he moves from parish to parish, but he continues to be a minister and you know, have access to children. And it continues on up until the late 90s when more of these complaints start pouring in. He finally admits everything on a confession in 1999. He's sent for more treatment, but he's made a Monsignor in 2000, returned to ministry again at St. Charles Borromeo in Destrehan, which is attached to a grammar school.
Wait, slow down. And 2000, he's made a Monsignor, and then what happens after that?
He's returned to ministry at a church that's attached to a grammar school where he was in charge of taking care, essentially looking after himself, he says to me in an interview. Then nobody was, you know, making sure that he wasn't having access to kids even at that point, even after the church leadership knew of all this stuff.
And who was your archbishop at that time?
It was Schulte, and then later in 2002, it was Archbishop Hughes, who was directed by an internal review board that he should laicize Lawrence Hecker. He should take away his priestly, make sure that he's no longer a priest. And he didn't do that. He just let him retire quietly, didn't inform the public, allowed him to get his full retirement benefits. And in 2011, the current archbishop, Gregory Amond, was given a whole rundown of all the complaints against Father Hecker or Monsignor Hecker. And he went ahead on the 60th anniversary of his ordination to celebrate his jubilee year in 2018 before telling the public in a list that was released in 2018 that he had credible claims of child sexual abuse. But again, didn't detail all of the many claims that he had faced. And so it really was this uphill battle for the police, the state police and the FBI, to finally be able to bring these charges, and DA Jason Williams here in New Orleans to bring the charges and force this to go to trial.
Complaints come in 88. Nothing's done for the victims. Nothing. No investigation is done. Correct me if I'm wrong. Other than sending him off for treatment, right? Or sabbatical,
correct,
or whatever it is. Then
correct,
in 1999, he confesses a written confession to church officials.
Correct.
About molesting kids.
Correct.
Then in 2000, they bring him in St. Louis Cathedral and promote him and make him a Monsignor. Give him an honored title, right?
Correct.
Then in 2002, they put him at a parish that's next to
us. In 2000, they put him in a parish. 2000. And then in 2002, they allow him to retire, remove him from ministry, but not in any kind of public announcement. And they did, at that time, for the first time, the church reported one complaint against Hecker to the police, to the NOPD. That was the first time that he was reported by church officials to the police, finally, in 2002. But it was only on one complaint, and nothing was done with that.
So I presume they keep a file on this guy, because I don't know about the company that owns Channel 4 now. Who is it? Who owns Channel 4?
Tegna.
Tegna. I know they got a file on you that goes back to Lord knows when. I'm sure Odyssey has a file on me that goes back to way back when. Common sense would dictate that the archdiocese has a file on Hecker, and it wouldn't
You don't need to speculate, Tommy. We have the documents from that file, many of which were leaked to us and that were filed under seal in the court and were kept under seal by the bankruptcy court for several years before DA Jason Williams was finally able to get them via subpoena. But we were able to get copies of those and show exactly in writing how the Archdiocese of New Orleans repeatedly knew about these claims and were more focused on making sure that the public didn't find out about them than they were about punishing or reporting to the police.
And that is the point right there, David, because you don't have to be a detective to say, well, wait a minute. This guy's got claims going back to 1988. He confessed in 1999, which lends if he confesses in 99 and he's diagnosed as a pedophile, a clinical diagnosis of that. Well, then you got to go back and believe that the complaints from 1988 are legitimate. It would beg any type of credibility to think anything but even with that, in 2000, they make him a Monsignor and then put him in a parish where he's got access to kids.
That's right. That's right. And I think that's the reason we wanted to do the special. You know, the comment that you received about us, you know, continuing to go over the same information. First of all, as we've gone through this, there's been more and more new information as we've reported this out. But the point of doing this hour-long special is you can see the whole scope of it, and you can see what we've just been talking about how the church handled the complaints and how they continued to bury this information, and how even difficult it was, even in these last couple of years, for the district attorney, Jason Williams, to get the information and the documentation that he needed to pursue the criminal case against Lawrence Hecker.
And that leads me to my next question, which is, and I talked to Jason himself about this a couple of days ago, about he said, why should it shouldn't be this hard to prosecute a pedophile, right? And I'm paraphrasing his words there. But if Lawrence Hecker wasn't a priest and these charges were made, if in 1975 somebody had gone to the police and Lawrence Hecker was not a priest, I got to believe that this story would have taken a different road. That's the point in all of this, right?
That is part of the point for sure. I mean, the police have a spotty history of pursuing claims against Catholic priests.
But now, wait, that's why I said if Hecker was not a priest.
Right, right. And let's be honest here, though, Tommy. The police in various jurisdictions around South Louisiana have a spotty record of pursuing sex crimes in general for a long time, something that Jason Williams, I know, has talked about. He talked about it at the press conference outside court when Lawrence Hecker pled guilty, that this has often been an uphill battle. But I think that when they pursue those claims, and they have in the past, they've had some success in convicting especially child rapists and child molesters. And, you know, they've been very aggressive, especially with child pornography charges and things like that, going after people like that. But because of statutes of limitations that have prevented these, you know, criminal charges from being pursued after a certain period of time, a lot of these claims that date back to the 60s and 70s and 80s in the church were not pursued. The key here with the 1975 case with the rape was that rape doesn't have a statute of limitations. That is what made this unique. It allowed the police and it allowed D.A. Williams to go forward with prosecution.
One question I have, and I don't know if you have the answer or not, is what happens to Hecker now, and where is he now? And somebody texted in, and I got to wonder if part of the guilty plea was so that he could live his life out wherever he is now and not go to prison. What is the deal currently, David?
Well, first of all, there was no guilty plea deal. You know,
let me clean that up. I didn't mean to make it seem as though it was an official deal. Part of his strategy, let me put it that way, was where he was hoping.
Because he pled guilty. He pled guilty on all counts, Tommy, and there's no deal to allow him to live out his sentence in a special place. Right now, he is in a long-term care facility on the West Bank. And
is that Weinhoven?
Under armed guard. No, I do not believe it. But the place that he's staying is under armed guard, and it is part of his incarceration. And he does need treatment because he does have physical ailments. But the comment that you received earlier about him being, frail, and why are you going after this guy? And I've heard from people who were taking care of him over the course of this trial, the pre-trial process, saying, you know, he's really an old guy and he's incapacitated, and it's really incredible that they're pursuing this. It reminds me a little bit of the Mississippi Burning case, when the three Freedom Riders, Cheney, Schwerner, and Goodman, were murdered and buried in Philadelphia, Mississippi. The state of Mississippi didn't pursue charges until 2005, and by that point, when they brought in the head of the Ku Klux Klan who had organized the whole thing, Edgar Ray Killen, he was attached to tubes and in a wheelchair, and people said, why are you going after this poor old guy? Well, he was convicted of three counts of manslaughter, and like you said, Tommy, when he was the head of the Klan and was, you know, killing these kids, he wasn't, you know, a doddering old guy. And, you know, there's no statute of limitations for murder and rape for a reason, because, you know, people who do those things have to be punished under the law and can be punished until the day they die. So if Lawrence Hecker only lives for another month or two or a year or whatever it is, as a 93-year-old man, he's still a convicted child rapist, and he's still going to be incarcerated during that time.
I want to retract this. I said Weinhoven. I should never have said that if I didn't know that. I just, when you said long-term care facility, and I thought Catholic priest, I just immediately, even though he is laicized, I thought that, and my apologies to Weinhoven. I shouldn't have said that. It's not Weinhoven. My dad was in Weinhoven, so I'm very familiar with the facility. We take a break. We'll pick it up here when we come back. A couple of different things we come back, David. First of all, does Hecker ever go to Angola, which is where he belongs? And then we'll talk about the ongoing investigation with the state police bankruptcy case and more. David Hammer, our guest, WWL Louisiana investigative reporter. If this would be a Fortune 500 company, I think people would be looking at it differently. And I think the story would be different if it was a Fortune 500 company. So I think that the Archdiocese is using its, ironically, its role as a religion to cover up some of the worst crimes. 944 traffic, WWL. All right, 951, Tommy Tucker, quickly back to Dave and Hammer. His special, Losing Faith, Praying, P-R-E-Y-I-N-G, from the pulpit, airs tonight, 9 o'clock, Channel 4. A lot more in-depth than we can even go here in the hour that he spent with us. And of course, they got pictures and so forth and graphics and all that stuff because, you know, it's television. That sounds stupid, but you know what I mean. David, when it comes to Hecker, does he go to Angola, or when do we find out what happens to him?
I suppose it's possible if his physical and mental condition improves, but because that would essentially be where he would be sentenced. But he's probably going to stay, and we'll find out more after the sentencing on the 18th. But he probably will stay in some kind of a long-term care facility. But again, it'll be incarceration. It'll be under armed guard. He won't be able to have, you know, visitors and be in a normal kind of condition that you would be in if you were in some kind of care like that.
But he's not handcuffed to the bed or anything, right?
No. But, you know, but he is under guard, so he would not be able to just get up and leave. So he's essentially incarcerated, but he needs this kind of care because he's of his physical condition. But if he improves, I suppose they could move him to another type of facility for prison. I did want to address something that you said before the last break about, you know, the use of the position as a religion, that maybe this was not that this was held secret for so long because of the Catholic Church being a religion. And if it were a Fortune 500 company, it might, you know, not have gone this way. I would just say that it actually probably has more to do with the structure, with the hierarchy of the Catholic Church, like other religions and like other entities, where there is a structure that allows these things to be hidden. And I'll just bring up a few examples. The American gymnastics team, the Boy Scouts of America, the Southern Baptist Convention, they all had, and I'm sure there are others, they all had, you know, major child sexual abuse scandals that went, you know, unreported or covered up for long periods of time because the structure was there and the people who were in it were beholden to the people and not able to, you know, they could be easily kind of poo-pooed. Their statements could be brushed aside or swept under the rug. And, you know, it's about a power structure. And I think the reason you don't necessarily see it in some of the other religions where it's a, you know, there's not a hierarchy, because if there's an individual clergyman who commits this kind of crime and it gets reported, it there's nobody above that to kind of keep it quiet. It would conceivably go to police and be investigated much more readily than what we've seen here.
I appreciate the honesty in that, the explanation, the clarity, and the objectivity. I was not a member of any kind of gymnastics team or the Boy Scouts. It's hard for me, and I'm no David Hammer, and I mean that sincerely. As a Catholic, it angers me, and it's hard for me to get the emotion out of it. And that's why I appreciate.
I just think it's important that this is not targeting Catholics.
No, I think that's why I said I appreciate what you said. I'm glad you cleared that up, because, again, I look at it from an emotional standpoint as a Catholic, and I'm glad that you did give that clarity to it. David, I'm going to be watching tonight. I can't thank you enough for your time and for the work that you and Ramon and the entire team does. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Tommy.
You bet. David Hammer, the name of the special is Praying, P-R-E-Y-I-N-G, Praying from the Pulpit, Losing Faith, 9 o'clock tonight, WWL-TV. We'll see what Newell's got planned for us when we come back on WWL.